Hello, and welcome to Parking Thought, the show where we highlight the good in the world, from the extraordinary to the everyday. You're going to want to like and subscribe wherever you happen to find us. Curiosity, meet gratitude. My name is Jacob, and I'm glad you're here today. In this edition, we're going to continue our theme this week of looking at family history. And so previously, we've talked about, you know, capturing some of those recordings. We listened to Lucius Clark. I talked about how my dad would use, our very first computer we had was purchased justified on the idea, on the process that would be enabled for being able to manage the family database of family members, right? The who we are, where we come from, and why we're here, all those sorts of things. And so, you know, one of the things that I find interesting is in both those instances, in those previous episodes, you hear how we have an audio recording. We're using some form of technology to capture the memories of those that have, you know, left us, right? From those in the past. What's interesting, though, is especially with the case of my father, going back and looking for his family records, sometimes you just have to start with a name, right? And sometimes those names aren't readily available. And so, you know, previously my father was using personal ancestral file and he was keeping the information locally stored on his computer, right? And as technology got better, he would still keep a local copy. It was still local and still local and still local. And then something magical happened with the internet. And it wasn't just right at the beginning, but it's definitely there now. And there are several great websites that are resources for people who are trying to go back and look through the family names. Now, I'm going to recommend one that is hosted and run by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. It is free, and it's called Family Search, right? And Family Search works where it tries to tie back to a lot of the records that exist out there, a lot of the stuff that's in the public archive. It has a pretty unique way of managing that through its UI and gives you a different user experience than maybe a paid service like Ancestry.com. You can link the two in various ways to be able to have your database and your connections, you know, tied between both. They're both really good services. If you want to do a paid version of that, Ancestry does a very good job. If you want to do a version that is free and readily available right now to you today, go to familysearch.org and that will allow you to do it. For those of you who may be in the Salt Lake area, I do have a friend, Trish. I haven't told her I podcast yet. This will be a good reason to get in touch with her. There is a family history library in downtown Salt Lake that is free and open to the public and very interactive, very engaging for lots of different age levels. And so you can go ahead and engage there. But what's interesting here is we've got to talk about, you know, connecting the names, right? We can go back through our memory. And for a lot of us, we know our parents and grandparents, and then it kind of ends. It kind of trails off at that point, you know, and so we need to look for names through some sort of documentation. We need to look for who those ancestors are through some sort of documentation, because their stories are absolutely amazing. When you can go back and you can find the generation that is listed on a ship's manifest, or that was born in one country and moved into the United States, or just moved to another country, or that migration story is really amazing. I mean, I've learned about in school, you know, the migration periods, you know, of people coming into the United States, but once I knew who in my family lines I was connected to during those migration periods, wow, did they become a lot more impactful and meaningful, and wow, did I want to study those. Now, that didn't happen while I was in high school. It happened afterwards. But boy, have those time periods meant a lot more to me since I've been able to go through and understand them. So for example, my father's research, he was able to tie back our family line to William Bradford, who was one of the first governors of Massachusetts, and he came over on the Mayflower. And how cool is that? That, like, I can watch the Peanuts, you know, Mayflower Voyage show, the half-hour show that they've got, and right there is the story that isn't just Charlie Brown going through it, you know, and Linus and Lucy and all that. It is literally the story of my ancestors. Now, it's told in cartoon format. It's told in 30 minutes, et cetera, but it's there, and it's a part of it. There's another part as well where one of the ancestors, the one who I'm named after actually, Jakob Rucker, was a German immigrant, and his records, according to the military, said that he claimed he was a doctor in Germany. Now, doctor is a bit of a loose term in those eras, mid-1800s, right? So we think he probably did something to help out others, but probably wasn't a full doctor in the sense that we understand it. One of the things we do know is that he was a part of the Brooklyn 14th Regiment, which fought at the Battle of Gettysburg. We also know from his military records he was wounded at the Battle of Gettysburg. And we also know that he didn't join his unit after Gettysburg. Like, there was a time period where he didn't rejoin his unit until December or January of that next year. And we have this from those records, from Finding a Family Name. And so we don't have a full, like, here's his story written in his word, like we do with Lucius Clark. But we do have these evidences and clues. And one of the things that's neat about this is, while it may not be true, there's a very good likelihood that because he was one of the wounded left at the Battle of Gettysburg and had not rejoined his unit, that he was likely one of the people that Abraham Lincoln wrote the Gettysburg Address for. Because remember, the Gettysburg Address was not written for some political purpose. It was written to the soldiers who were wounded and left behind, who had managed to survive the diseases caused by medicine and general poor health of that time period. That's who it was written for. And so we tell the family story, right, because of what we've been able to piece together with his record, that there's a very good chance that one of our ancestors was there and present when Abraham Lincoln stood up and said, 80, right? And whatever, I can't remember the Gettysburg Address right now. But to stand up there and say those very powerful words and be able to hear them about putting a nation back together again and what that meant to him, and to give meaning for the carnage that they had seen. Tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people had died at the Battle of Gettysburg. And the smell, you know, of the hot summer and those bodies being left behind must have been tremendous. And to have to have been wounded and stayed there must have been an experience that was not one any father would want their children to have to experience. So Jacob may have been there. But let's talk about another story today, right? And the idea of finding our names, right? Finding the names, the process of looking for those names. Family Search is a good place to start because you can look and you can piece through things with censuses and other things. There are YouTube videos that can help train you on this. I don't have any ones in particular I'd recommend, so I'm going to have to ask you to Google them. But you have the ability to go back a couple of generations, start looking for those ancestors that have passed away, because once they have, their records can be publicized, usually over 72 years old or something like that. And then you can start piecing together their family lives and history and find out how your family got to where they were at and what they were doing. Now, I grew up or was born in California, but my mother was actually born in Washington State. Her father was born in Utah, right? And his father was not born in Utah. He was probably born in England, if memory serves me right, and had to cross the plains. Imagine crossing the plains, handcart or a wagon with an ox pulling it, slowly trudging along. What I've now driven over several times at 75, 80 miles an hour, you know, they had to walk and were lucky to get 5 to 10 to 15 miles a day. You know, what an amazing story that helps make us us. Now, on my wife's side of the family, they didn't have the technology, the ability, or the history to be able to do a whole lot of genealogy research. And so when we got married, that was a bit of a blank spot. We had generations going back. We had stuff going back a few years, but we didn't have things going back much further than 1900. And we did have one birth certificate. And this birth certificate is for Jan Hovaniak. And I can't pronounce that properly. It's in Polish. And I do not speak Polish. So I've spent the afternoon Googling some of these terms, and I'll do my best to pronounce them. But Jan Hovaniak has a birth certificate that was in our family records. And it lists the province and area of Poland where he was from. When my parents were visiting us while we were living in Germany, I was stationed in Germany for the latter part of my career, for the last 5 years that I was in the service. We took a trip to Poland. So my parents, who were good at, especially my dad, of having to learn and research the names, were with us, and we wanted to go visit this town, right? We wanted to go visit this town. Let me go to my other screen here so I can work on how I pronunciate this. So let me try this here. Jusinzia. All right. So it's spelled Jusczyna. And I did that with the proper Canadian and British pronunciation of the letter Z, right, for you guys. So this is a town, right? that was first mentioned in 1628. It was also a part of Poland that tended to cross borders pretty frequently, like Poland, Hungary, and a few other places laid claim to it over time. And although the ancestor that was there left, you know, all of the family records and all of that history was, you know, we generally expect that to be stored with the church. And in July 16th of 1908, there was a huge rainstorm. And so the Jusinka stream, right, near the Jusinzna town or village, overflowed and uprooted trees and branches and destroyed the church that was in there. 21 people were killed because of this. And the whole event, like, was very traumatic for the town. So they rebuilt the church, right? They called it the Visitation of the Blessed Virgin Mary. And it was built in 1924 to 1927. We didn't know that, right? We knew that there was a family record, a birth certificate that got us to that town. We took a physical copy of it and we showed up to this town, and I speak no Polish, right? You guys have heard the extent of my Polish. My wife doesn't speak Polish. She speaks German. Oh, and by the way, don't try to speak German in Poland, because there's some history there where that's not really polite. We didn't know that either. Found that out the hard way. Anyway, so, and we didn't find that out in Jusinka. We found that out before we got to Jusinka. So we get to Jusinka, and we find the church. Beautiful church building, very well done, from very humble people who dedicated their time and effort to make sure that it would be respectful of how they worship their God. So we look at the church building and we notice that the priest's house, a very Catholic area, the priest's house is next door. So we knock on the door and the priest doesn't speak English. And we're trying to explain to him, we're looking for so-and-so, we're looking for so-and-so. So we're pointing at a birth certificate where, you know, the ancestor was born in that village and in that area in the late 1800s. And we're pointing this, we're saying, we're looking for this, we're looking for this. And he didn't understand. Thankfully, next to the church was a school. And so he brought us over to the school, and we sat down in the entranceway there, and he gave us, you know, two hand signs to sit or hold still, right? And so we stood there, and he went into the English teacher's class, stopped class, grabbed the English teacher, and brought her, right, out to us to be our translator. I mean, how cool is this, right? And so we're explaining to the English teacher what we're looking for and why we're looking for this, and she's translating it. And you know, the priest is like, well, why are you looking for this person? You know, it sounded like they would only get requests like this if it were a private investigator, not somebody looking for their past. But this is a huge chunk of my wife's past. This was her grandfather, great-grandfather, whose birth certificate we had. And we wanted to know, we wanted to connect this back further. This was so important to her. And so, you know, the English teacher translates, so grateful for that experience. The English teacher translates, the priest understands what we're after, and he goes back and takes us back into the office building next to the chapel, right? And he goes and he walks over to a bookshelf, and I can see three or four really old books, and he pulls one down off the shelf and he opens it up. And inside this book is all of the records for that parish going back hundreds of years. They somehow survived the flood. This building that it was built in had been around since 1924, and it was so made of wood, and there was no fireproofing, that if any fire had started, all of those records, all of those names, all of those ancestors, all of that story would have been lost. And they were all there waiting for us. And so we pointed to one, and then pointed to another name, and then pointed to another name. And my wife and I, we grabbed our phones and our cameras, and we just started taking pictures as he would point on the pages. And what we did from there, because that's a really poor way, that's a very excited way to do genealogical research or family history research. It's a very poor way to do it, because you don't get the full story of the family line. And the best way to do that is to hire somebody in the area that speaks the language. And so we did that, right? On a future trip, or shortly thereafter, we were able to contract with a local genealogist who spoke Polish. He went down there to the priest's office, and the priest was still scratching his head. He said, you know, the priest was still scratching his head, wondering why somebody would care about these things, but helped him out. And we were able to get those family lines traced back further and further and further. And so now for us, right, as members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, I've mentioned this before, we are passionate about doing the work that we believe will be necessary for them to be saved, right, for them to draw closer to God. And so my children have stood in place of those ancestors as because they've been baptized in the temples here that we've been able to visit. And that's been a very special experience for us to be able to show our love for these relatives by standing in their place and being baptized on their behalf. And it's been a real special experience to have those names. Sometimes you need to start with a name, and then you can build out the story from there. You know, up until today, we didn't know about the flood. Sometime between the time that we went there and today, the online, you know, references that we use got updated with having the flood as a reference in there. We had no idea that those records managed to survive a flood. And I still think that that priest has no idea how truly grateful we are that they did, and how truly grateful we are that he has kept them and cared for them and loved them the same way that we love those ancestors who we haven't met, but who are still a very important part of our story. And so that, ladies and gentlemen, is the story I wanted to share today with you guys, is that sometimes you have to start with a name. And I do think that because your story of who you are, both as a person here on the earth and as a child of God, is important, I believe that as you search for that, that you will have the windows of heaven opened up to you, and you'll be able to see miracles like the one we had in Drusyzna in Poland, in this little village, help us be able to connect back to who we are. Well, that's it for this episode. Let's wrap this up. This is the part where I tell you that the best way to say thank you for this episode is to share it with somebody else that you know. If you're just joining us for this episode because maybe you had something in there that allowed you to find it out of Google search, so glad to have you. If you want to stick around for the long haul, then please head on over to Parking Thought. We've got subscribe links there curated directly for you, so you can subscribe whatever type of device you use or whatever app you like to use, Spotify, Stitcher, Pocket Cast, all of those things. You can find the links for them there. At the end of every episode, I like to offer this challenge to the audience: to remember, in a world where you can choose to be anything, why not choose to be grateful?